Welcome to the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, where every death had a life and every life had a story. My name is Jenny Johnson.
Hello, and I'm Diane Hartshorn. We begin this week's episode with a quote from explorer Matthew Henson. It'll work if God, wind, leaves, ice, snow, and all the hells of this damn frozen land are willing. This was in reference to Matthew Henson's journey to the North Pole in 1909.
In today's episode, we will learn about Matthew Henson and Robert Perry, who were the first men credited to have successfully reached the North Pole. We will also learn a bit about Major General Adolphus Washington Greely, who served in the American Civil War and was also an Arctic explorer. All three of these men are buried in Arlington National Cemetery, which is the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery we are featuring this week.
The Arlington Cemetery brochure states that Arlington National Cemetery has evolved from a place of necessity to a national shrine to those who have honorably served our nation during times of war, including every military conflict in American history and during times of peace. The cemetery is the final resting place for more than 400,000 active duty service members, veterans, and their families. Service to country is the common thread that binds all who are honored and remembered here.
We chose to feature this cemetery for a very special reason that we will discuss more at the end of this episode, but this is the cemetery where the annual Wreaths Across America began, and we felt it was important to mention something that has become an annual holiday tradition for many families across the U.S. Arlington National Cemetery is located in Arlington, Virginia. The property was originally owned by George Washington Park Custis, grandson of Martha Washington and step-grandson of George Washington. It was passed down to his daughter, Mary Anna Randolph Custis, who married General Robert E. Lee on June 30, 1831.
In May of 1861, the Union Army took control of Arlington Estate after Mrs. Lee abandoned it to stay with her sister in Fairfax County, Virginia. At this point, Robert E. Lee had resigned from the Army and was made a general of the Confederate Army. The Union Army used the property as a camp and headquarters. In 1863, the government established Freedmen's Village on a portion of the estate as a way to assist the slaves transitioning to freedom. The village provided housing, education, training, and medical care.
As the number of Civil War casualties was outpacing other local Washington, D.C.-based cemeteries, the property became a burial location. The first military burial took place on May 13, 1864, for Private William Christman. On June 15, the War Department officially set aside approximately 200 acres of the property to use as a cemetery. By the end of the war, thousands of service members and former slaves were buried here. Ultimately, the Lee family was compensated for the property and the land remained with the War Department.
Some notable burials include Presidents William Howard Taft and John F. Kennedy. His brother, Robert F. Kennedy, is also buried there, as is President Kennedy's widow, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. You will also find the graves of heavyweight boxing champion Joe Louis, Academy Award-winning actor Lee Marvin, who happens to be one of my favorites, Secretary of War and son of President Abraham Lincoln, Robert Lincoln, first female surgeon in the U.S. Army, Anita Newcomb McGee, and Navy Rear Admiral and computer scientist Grace Hopper.
And of course, we can't forget the three explorers we are featuring today, Matthew Henson, Robert Perry, and Major General Greely. We will begin with Matthew Henson and Robert Perry as their stories go hand in hand to some degree. Matthew Henson and Robert Perry were both on the same expedition in 1909, determined to reach the North Pole. Matthew Henson was the first African American to reach the North Pole, and it is he who planted the first American flag there. In 1988, by presidential order, Henson's remains were moved from their original burial location to Arlington National Cemetery.
According to NationalGeographic.com, Matthew Alexander Henson was born on August 8, 1866, to a family of freeborn sharecroppers in Anjemoy, Maryland. And I want to extend any apologies if I butchered that name. It was 1 year after emancipation and the end of the Civil War. An African American of the first generation to roam the world after the abolition of slavery, Henson led a singular life of exploration and discovery that would usher in the modern era of adventure that continues now through the 21st century.
Henson was orphaned as a young boy. When he was 12 years old, he became a cabin boy on a ship called the Katy Hines. For 6 years, he worked under Captain Childs, gaining an education, technical and sailing skills, and traveling the world. Their work aboard the Katy Hines took them on voyages to what was then called the Orient, North Africa, and the Black Sea. Captain Childs had been a mentor to Henson, so when he died in 1887, Matthew Henson decided to take a break from the Katy Hines and went to work in Washington, D.C. as a shop clerk.
Robert Edwin Perry Sr. was born in Pennsylvania in 1856, but due to his father's death when he was a young boy, he spent most of his childhood in Maine. As a young man, he attended Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. After college, he enlisted in the Navy in 1881 as a civil engineer. Perry's first Arctic expedition was in 1886, when he made an unsuccessful attempt to cross Greenland by dog sled. He attempted the same trip again in 1891, this time successfully proving that Greenland really was an island. Perry was ordered by the Navy to explore likely routes for a proposed Nicaragua canal. While preparing for this trip, he went to the shop where Matthew Henson was working as a clerk and learned of Henson's years at sea. Perry was impressed by Henson that he asked him to join him as his personal valet to the jungles of Nicaragua.
Henson agreed, and from that time forward, traveled with Perry not only to Nicaragua, but on all his future Arctic expeditions as well. Perry's success on his 1891 trip to Greenland was made possible with the help of his friend and fellow explorer, Matthew Henson. Although Perry was the public face of their partnership, Henson was the front man in the field. With his skills as a carpenter and craftsman, Henson personally built and maintained all of the sledges used for their expeditions. He was fluent in the Inuit language and established a rapport with the native people of the region. He was known by all he encountered as Matthew the Kind One. Henson learned the methods the Inuit used to survive and travel through the incredibly hostile landscapes of the Arctic. He was more of an Eskimo than some of them, Perry once said.
In 1906, with the support of President Theodore Roosevelt, Perry and Henson managed to get within 174 miles of the North Pole by ship using a state-of-the-art icebreaker. On the three-masted steam-powered schooner called the Roosevelt, Perry and Henson made it closer to the pole than on any expedition to date. In 1908, the two men decided they would once again attempt to reach the North Pole. A team of 25 left New York Harbor on July of 1908 to sail to Ellesmere Island, Canada, from which they would begin their journey by dog sled. A party of 24 men, 19 sleds, and 133 dogs departed from their base on Ellesmere Island on March 1st, 1909. As the expedition continued, several of the men chose to turn back so that by the time the North Pole was reached, all that remained of the original core were Perry, Henson, 40 dogs, and four native Inuit hunters.
In his 1912 biography, The Negro at the North Pole, Henson wrote, quote, "The commander, who was about 50 yards behind, called out to me and said we would go into camp. We were in good spirits and none of us were cold. So we went to work and promptly built our igloos, fed our dogs, and had dinner. The sun being obscured by the mist, it was impossible to make observations and tell whether or not we had actually reached the pole. The only thing we could do was to crawl into our igloos and go to sleep. The next morning, the results of the first observation showed that we had figured out the distance very accurately, for when the flag was hoisted over the geographical center of the Earth, it was located just behind our igloos.
According to Perry and Hansen's records, this occurred on April 6, 1909. It was determined that because Hansen's sled had been ahead of the rest of the group, he had reached the North Pole first. I was in the lead that had overshot the mark by a couple of miles, Hansen was quoted in a newspaper article upon their return. We went back then, and I could see that my footprints were the first on the spot. However, upon their return to the U.S., and due to the racial divisive climate at the time, Hansen's accomplishments could not overshadow Perry's. Perry was a recognized discoverer of the North Pole, while Hansen was relegated to the role of trusted companion. Despite Hansen's indisputable contributions to their efforts for almost 20 years, he received very little acknowledgement.
We do want to note that there are some who dispute that the Perry expedition was actually the first to reach the North Pole. There are claims that they were off in their estimations anywhere from 30 to 60 miles from the actual pole. Robert Perry died in Washington, D.C. on February 20, 1920, at the age of 64, and was buried in Arlington National Cemetery. Matthew Hansen died on March 9, 1955, and was originally interred at Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx in New York. However, on April 6, 1988, by order of President Ronald Reagan, his remains, along with his wife's, were relocated to Arlington National Cemetery. On the 79th anniversary of his having reached the North Pole, Hansen was laid to rest with full military honors near the monument to Robert Perry.
We also wanted to mention Major General Adolphus Washington Greely, another man famed for his Arctic exploration. Greely was born on March 27, 1844, in Newburysport, Massachusetts. He enlisted in the 19th Massachusetts Volunteer Infantry and served throughout the Civil War, seeing action in several major battles, sustaining several wounds on three occasions. In 1881, he volunteered for a scientific expedition to the Arctic, being planned by the Army, according to recommendations of the 1879 International Polar Geographical Conference, which had designated 1882 to 83 as the first international polar year. He was placed in command of a 25-man party sent to establish a meteorological station and sailed in July from Newfoundland aboard the USS Protitas, and in August landed at Lady Franklin Bay on the eastern shore off Ellesmere Island.
There he established his base camp, Fort Conger, where detailed meteorological and geophysical observations were carried out and from which exploratory expeditions set out for the interior, discovering Lake Hazen and, on the eastern coast, Green Fjord, and in May 1882 reaching their furthest point north, 83 degrees, 24 minutes. Supply and relief ships set out in 1882 and in 1883, but failed to reach Fort Conger. In August 1883, by prior arrangement, he and his men broke camp and made their way south by boat to Cape Sabine, beyond which they could not go. With dwindling provisions, they wintered there, and by the time relief arrived in June 1884, which was on the USS Thetis, USS Bear, and USS Alert, all under the command of Commander Winfield Scott Shealy, there were left only Greely and six others, one of whom died shortly thereafter. Although he was publicly criticized at first, it eventually became clear that, given his explicit orders and sheer physical necessity, performed correctly and courageously throughout the ordeal. He died in Washington on October 20th, 1935, and was buried in Section 1 of Arlington National Cemetery.
So while none of these men are Santa Claus, however, if you Google their pictures, they all had beards. We felt it would be fun to feature them as they traveled in the lands where Mr. and Mrs. Claus and Santa's elves are said to live. There is far more to all of their stories than we have time to share in a 20-ish minute podcast. So please, if they have inspired you, we encourage you to research them further.
And now we return back to Arlington National Cemetery. The cemetery remains active with funeral services Monday through Saturday, except federal holidays, conducting between 27 and 30 services each weekday and between 6 and 8 services each Saturday. Information on burial eligibility and military honors is available on the cemetery's website. More than 3,000 ceremonies and memorial services also take place at the cemetery each year, including national observances for Memorial Day and Veterans Day held at the Memorial Amphitheater.
Another annual observance that happens not only at Arlington, but in cemeteries across the nation is Wreaths Across America. We will be reading the story of how this tradition began directly from wreathsacrossamerica.org. Morrill Worcester, owner of Worcester Wreath Company of Harrington, Maine, was a 12-year-old paperboy for the Bangor Daily News when he won a trip to Washington, D.C. His first trip to our nation's capital was one he would never forget. And Arlington National Cemetery made an especially indelible impression on him. This experience followed him throughout his life and successful career, reminding him that his good fortune was due in large part to the values of this nation and the veterans who made the ultimate sacrifice for their country. In 1992, Worcester Wreath found themselves with a surplus of wreaths nearing the end of the holiday season. Remembering his boyhood experience at Arlington, Worcester realized he had an opportunity to honor our country's veterans. With the aid of Maine Senator Olympia Snow, arrangements were made for the wreaths to be placed at Arlington in one of the older sections of the cemetery that had been receiving fewer visitors each passing year.
As plans were underway, a number of other individuals and organizations stepped up to help. James Prout, owner of local trucking company Bluebird Ranch Incorporated, generously provided transportation all the way to Virginia. Volunteers from the local American Legion and VFW posts gathered with members of the community to decorate each wreath with traditional red, hand-tied bows. Members of the Maine State Society of Washington, D.C. helped to organize the wreath laying, which included a special ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. The annual tribute went on quietly for several years, until 2005, when a photo of the stones at Arlington, adorned with wreaths and covered in snow, circulated around the internet. Suddenly, the project received national attention. Thousands of requests poured in from all over the country from people wanting to help with Arlington, to emulate the Arlington project at their national and state cemeteries, or to simply share their stories and thank Morrill Worcester for honoring our nation's heroes.
Unable to donate thousands of wreaths to each state, Worcester began sending 7 wreaths to every state, one for each branch of the military and for POWs, MIAs. In 2006, with the help of the Civil Air Patrol and other civic organizations, simultaneous wreath laying ceremonies were held at over 150 locations around the country. The Patriot Guard riders volunteered as escort for the wreaths going to Arlington. This began the annual Veterans Honor Parade that travels the East Coast in early December. The annual trip to Arlington and the groups of volunteers eager to participate in Worcester's simple wreath laying event grew each year until it became clear the desire to remember and honor our country's fallen heroes were bigger than Arlington and bigger than this one company.
In 2007, the Worcester family, along with veterans and other groups and individuals who had helped with their annual Veterans Wreath Ceremony in Arlington, formed Wreaths Across America, a nonprofit 501c3 organization to continue and expand this effort and support other groups around the country who wanted to do the same. The mission of the group is simple: remember, honor, teach. In 2008, over 300 locations held wreath laying ceremonies in every state, Puerto Rico, and 24 overseas cemeteries. Over 100,000 wreaths were placed on veterans' graves. Over 60,000 volunteers participated. And that year, December 13, 2008, was unanimously voted by the U.S. Congress as Wreaths Across America Day.
In 2014, Wreaths Across America and its national network of volunteers laid over 700,000 memorial wreaths at 1,000 locations in the United States and beyond, including ceremonies, at the Pearl Harbor Memorial, as well as Bunker Hill, Valley Forge, and the sites remembered in the September 11th tragedies. This was accomplished with help from 2,047 sponsorship groups, corporate contributions, and donations of trucking, shipping, and thousands of helping hands. The organization's goal of covering Arlington National Cemetery was met in 2014 with the placement of 226,525 wreaths. The wreath laying is still held annually on the second or third Saturday of December. Wreaths Across America annual pilgrimage from Harrington, Maine to Arlington National Cemetery has become known as the world's largest veterans parade, stopping at schools, monuments, veterans' homes, and community all along the way to remind people how important it is to remember, honor, and teach. Man, that would be something to see.
I know. That's what I keep thinking. Wreaths Across America also conducts several programs to honor our veterans, including the popular Thanks a Million campaign, which distributes cards to people all over the country to give veterans a simple thank you for their service. Wreaths Across America participates in veterans events throughout the year and has a veteran liaison on staff to work with local veterans organizations. Wreaths Across America is committed to teaching younger generations about the value of their freedoms and the importance of honoring those who sacrificed so much to protect those freedoms. The organization offers learning tools, interactive media projects, and opportunities for youth groups to participate in the events. They also work to create opportunities to connect the greatest generation with the generation of hope, passing on inspirational stories from World War II veterans to the leaders of the future. Wreaths Across America would not be successful without the help of volunteers, active organizations, and the generosity of the trucking industry, which offer invaluable support to Wreaths Across America's mission to remember the men and women who served our country, honor our military and their families, and teach our children about our freedom and those who protect it.
Unfortunately, due to COVID, many cemeteries have strict rules about how many wreaths are being placed this year. So please be sure to check with your local cemeteries if you are interested in volunteering to find out the proper protocol. Wreaths Across America is also a fundraising opportunity for local nonprofits.
Before we end this week's podcast, we are going to choose the winner of the giveaway that we announced last week. So just as a reminder, the giveaway includes the book Stories in Stone, A Field Guide to Cemetery Symbolism and Iconography by Douglas Keister, a beautifully carved wooden bookmark with Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery engraved on the back from the Bookish Den, a 65-page notepad with a downward hand and rose symbol at the top designed by Open Sea Design Company, and a Memento Mori pin that is a grave decoration on William Field's headstone in St. John's Cemetery in Providence, Rhode Island. And both the pen and the notepad were purchased at Emporium 32 in Salem, Massachusetts.
And the bookmark you mentioned was from an Etsy store.
Yes. Yeah, the Bookish Den is an Etsy shop. So if you're interested in any of those items for yourself, if you don't happen to win today, definitely check out their websites. Like I said, Emporium 32 or the Bookish Den. Look them up on Google and they have awesome stuff. So, and you know, it's nice to support those small businesses no matter where we're from. Okay, so we have all the names. You can hear me.
I do a drum roll.
Drum roll. And the winner is, oh wait, they're kind of sticking together because I did them on sticky notes. The winner is at Old New England Gravestones. So this one came off of Instagram. I can tell by the name, at Old New England Gravestones. So congratulations.
Cool. Congratulations.
If you're listening, you probably, by the time we put this out, you have already been contacted by us. And hopefully I'll have the prizes in the mail to you. But if not, if you hear this, congratulations. We're so excited that you get to win our first ever giveaway.
And we look forward to doing another one very soon.
We do.
That was fun.
And as always, We would be very grateful if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on our website at www.theordinaryextraordinarycemetery.com, or you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery. That's all one word. There's no punctuation in that. Or on Twitter at Ord Extra Sim. We love hearing from you guys.
So everyone, stay safe. Thank you. Until we meet again.